They are some of the world's most notorious serial killers.
He was like a god when he had a corpse as his plaything.
But were these psychopaths born evil, or did their mothers make them into monsters?
She just felt disgusted and disappointed in him.
I'm Donal McIntyre, and I'm on a quest to explore how some of history's most horrific murderers were molded by their dysfunctional relationships with their mothers.
When it comes to people who are pathological, psychopathic, the influence of the mother is absolutely dominant.
I'll be piecing together events in their childhoods and talking to criminologists and psychologists to try to understand what motivated their monstrous crimes.
We had never come across a serial killer who'd killed that many people.
In this episode, Dennis Nielsen, the kindly killer. He lured men back to his flat with the promise of food, then strangled them to death.
Would he have killed me? If I had gone into that flat, I don't think I would have come out.
Did his descent into murder have its roots in a warped relationship between mother and son? It's here in leafy North London where Nielsen would strangle and drown at least 15 young men, some as young as just 14, often keeping their bodies as company for months on end.
Dennis Nielsen took sexual gratification from having dead bodies around him.
When the corpses became too rotten, Nielsen would chop, boil and burn the remains, then flush them down the toilet. Body parts belonging to three victims were initially found here at 23 Cranley Gardens in Muswell Hill when the drains beneath Nielsen's flat became blocked. Police officer Peter Jay collected samples of the rotting remains from the outside drain and took them to the Home Office pathologist for analysis.
He said, you're right about the bones. He said they're from somebody's hand.
The source of the human remains was clearly Nielsen's top floor flat in Muswell Hill. Police collared him on his return home from work, but nothing could prepare them for what they would find inside.
So we went up the stairs, followed him up the stairs, and got inside his flat, and immediately we were all hit by the smell of decomposing flesh. And I stared straight in his eyes and said, "Don't mess me about, where's the rest of the body?" And he paused just for a second and he said, "Okay, it's in plastic bags in the front room."
Nielsen was immediately arrested and taken for questioning to Hornsey Police Station.
When I was driving the car back to the police station, with Nielsen sitting in the back with Steve McCusker, my deputy, Steve suddenly popped the question to Nielsen, "Are we talking here about one body or two?" And Nielsen immediately responded with neither. He said, "I think it's 15 or 16. We hadn't seen anything like this before. We'd never come across a serial killer who'd killed that many people.
At the police station, Nielsen calmly explained the gross indignities he inflicted on the young men's corpses.
He had a body covered in flour that was lying on the bed, and he would lie on the bed next to that body. Whether it was for sexual gratification or not, I don't know.
His mother was in a state of shock and denial when his crimes were revealed.
Something must have happened to him, because it's not my Dennis that's doing it. Not the boy I knew that's doing these things.
What made this ordinary man one of Britain's most extraordinary killers? Were the seeds for Nielsen's murder and mayhem sown by his mother?
Dennis Nielsen was born here in the remote fishing port of Fraserburgh in Scotland on November 23rd, 1945. His mother's family had been in the area for generations, but his father, Olaf, was a Norwegian soldier who came over here during the war. Olaf and Dennis's mother, Betty, had three children together, Olaf Jr., Dennis, and Sylvia. But Olaf wasn't a great husband to Betty. They never set up a home together, and Betty continued to live with her parents.
He was feckless and irresponsible, and he enjoyed a good time much more than he enjoyed being responsible and being a family man.
Betty and Olaf divorced when Nielsen was just 4 years old. But a callous comment his mother would make about his father would fester in Nielsen's mind for years to come.
He remembered certain things that his mother said to him and his sister, one of which was that you wouldn't know your father if you met him in the street.
Nielsen later claimed his mother's offhand comment was the reason why she didn't show him as much love as his other siblings.
Nielsen has a theory that maybe his father only fathered Olaf Jr. and that he might have been illegitimate.
It caused him to ponder later on in life about whether his mother was a slut or not.
Betty was stuck living with her parents and was dealing with the shame of her divorce. Wrapped up in her own world, she was cold and distant towards Dennis, and most importantly, barely touched him.
His mother wasn't the most warm person towards Nielsen, so therefore he's not going to get the cuddles and love that a child should have when they're growing up.
Tactility is incredibly important when you're growing up. The contact is crucial. He had none of that.
With his mother ignoring him and no dad on the scene, Dennis would turn to his grandfather for attention.
His grandfather was very much the father figure. And his grandfather did all of the quality things that his mother didn't have time for.
Even though Nielsen's grandfather was working hard as a trawler man, he still found time for Dennis between voyages.
So they'd go for long walks, they'd fly kites, and they'd talk to each other. And it was through this relationship that Dennis felt valuable and felt that he was actually worthwhile.
He called his grandfather his great hero and protector and talked of the great emptiness he would feel when his grandfather was on a long fishing trip out in the North Sea. Tragically, when Dennis was just 6 years of age, his grandfather would die of a heart attack while out at sea at just 62 years of age. But his mother kept the young Dennis in ignorance about his grandfather's death. And she was to reveal her total lack of empathy when it came to explaining that his hero grandfather was dead.
He was 6 years old. His mother said to him, "Do you want to see your granddad?" And he didn't realise that he'd come back from sea. So he said, "Oh, yes." And he was taken into the very small room, which was a kitchen and dining room. And there on the dining room table was a long box, and in it was lying his grandfather. Nobody bothered to tell him that he was dead.
At only 6 years old, Nielsen had been unthinkingly exposed by his mother to the immediate horrors of death. Betty's callous handling of this most sensitive of situations would irreparably damage Nielsen's young mind.
A lot of people have said that at the point at which Dennis was lifted up to view his grandfather's body, a terrible, traumatic and instant fusion between love and death was forged in his mind. And he spent the rest of his life seeking to find somebody to replace his grandfather. And the only way he could do that was by killing people and having those bodies close to him.
His grandfather's death left him feeling abandoned, and his mother's emotional coldness only made matters worse. But could these traumatic events have turned him into a murderer?
Serial killers never have normal childhoods. I think that's true, and this is the case with Nielsen.
I think it's interesting to start by looking at his relationship with his mother. She's a single parent. And she's struggling to raise three children alone. So her attention is diluted, really.
So when we're looking back at how significant was mother in this, well, she was significant in what she didn't do more than what she did do.
I think so. The attachment or the lack of it that we have with our mother is so fundamental into, you know, making us the people that we become. He's not learned how to have those feelings of empathy, of compassion for other people, because they've never been shown to him, not by his mother, not by anybody. So our attachments with our mothers shape our expectations of our attachments that we'll go on to have with other people.
But there's an alternative figure there, there's a grandfather, and that's a crucial bond, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. So he's gone from having a very weak attachment with his mum to having an incredibly strong attachment with his grandfather. So when his grandfather's out of the picture, gone is all that attention and all of that love and all that targeting that Dennis has come to expect. So there's a real kind of void there. I think that's where you start to see some of the issues which manifest themselves later on.
Coming up, Nielsen's isolation from his mother drives him into a dark and dangerous fantasy world.
He has this fixation with death and with sex. Eventually, he started seeing reality around him as if it were a film.
The young Dennis Nielsen, emotionally bereft from his grandfather's death and denied any comfort from his cold-hearted mother, would withdraw into a fantasy world. Her remarriage and the arrival of four siblings in quick succession would not improve his state of mind. It further isolates him from his own mother and the rest of the family. But would this early alienation be the source of those inner demons, which would cause him to commit cold-blooded murder just 20 years later?
Betty Nielsen married Adam Scott in 1954, and the whole family moved here to Stricken, just down the road from Fraserburgh. In his prison diaries, Nielsen spoke of the disgust he felt at having to listen to his mother and her new man make love, producing new offspring. Offspring that would divert his mother's attention away from himself.
Dennis knew that she was having sex with her husband because occasionally he would hear them having sex. And I think that as much as he felt disgusted by that, he must have felt a little bit jealous as well, because on one level he did crave his mother's affection.
Now Betty had a new husband to please. She certainly had no extra love for Dennis. And her lack of emotion meant Nielsen would never get the attention he craved.
I think Dennis Nielsen is likely to have felt rejection from his mother, and she didn't sound like she actually went to any great lengths to reduce that.
Betty had six other children to look after, but she seemed to ignore the fact Nielsen was desperate for her love.
He's playing second fiddle to other children, other siblings, and he's bound to have sibling rivalry and envy because he's just not getting the attention he needs.
But it wasn't just that she was now busy with more children and a new husband. At just 9 years of age, Nielsen felt he was intentionally left out of his mother's affections, something she actually admitted to later in life.
His mother told me herself, she said, "Oh, I couldn't cuddle him." Well, and I say to her, "Well, I'm sorry, Betty, but that's your fault, not his."
The relationship was like two opposite poles of a magnet. They were repelling each other at this stage.
Betty's lack of affection would start Nielsen on the path to being an emotionally starved killer, obsessed with corpses.
She played a part in not giving him the tactile affection. It's crucial to be in the arms of your parent, to be comforted in some way.
Betty never had the motherly instinct to know that Dennis was a child who needed extra attention.
She didn't give him that. I'm not sure why. She wasn't sure why, but she wasn't able to do that, and she could not explain it.
Betty doesn't have the emotional intelligence to understand what is going on internally for her son. She just can't get him.
But she wasn't wicked at all. She was simple.
Nielsen and his mom are beginning to drift apart while living in the same house. Is Betty just a busy mom, or is Nielsen exhibiting the early signs of the detached killer he'd become?
lots of things happening in his life, and it's not getting any better. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, his significance and his relationship with his own mother is getting weaker and weaker.
Dennis is increasingly losing control over the situation that's developing with the family as it grows. So he's come off the back of this really strong relationship with his grandfather, who's now passed away, and his mother moves on and she remarries and she has another 4 children. So he's, with every subsequent child, he's 1 of 3, then he's 1 of 4, then he's 1 of 5 and 6, then finally 1 of 7. So her attention has been diluted even further, and that would have had a massive impact on a young lad of this age.
And to be honest, she never really gave him much affection. So this is a lot of resentment and anger, and I'd imagine in a very unreconstructed mind of a 9-year-old, a lot of hatred.
And he's seeing the nuclear family take form in front of his eyes, but he's not part of it. So that's further kind of compounding his feelings of shame and exclusion and really not being part of this happy picture that his mum is increasingly painting. I think he does feel very much increasingly excluded from the picture with every new child that's introduced into this new family. And I think he's still seeking approval, essentially, from his mother, from that parent who he's always been competing for the attention of.
Dennis Nielsen was now age 10, ignored by his mother and excluded from his close family. Forced to entertain himself, he delves into a daydreaming state. But without motherly affection to shape a normal child, his thoughts would take a dark turn.
His teenage fantasies were not, how dare one say, the normal ones that most boys and girls have. His fantasies were dealing with death.
His mother had no time or inclination to steer him away from these morbid thoughts, and soon Dennis would become lost in his warped make-believe world.
He began to lose a sense of what was real and what was in his imagination. The introversion developed to a point where eventually he started seeing reality around him as if it were a film.
It's here on this remote Scottish coast where Nielsen recalls the very first time he was struggling with the division between his fantasy world and his world of reality. And he talks about walking into the sea fully clothed around 11 or 12, and then those recollections develop into some kind of sexual dream.
Nielsen claims to have had the sensation of drowning, and then waking up on the beach to find a sticky substance on his chest and an older boy standing over him. This led Nielsen to assume he'd been saved by the boy, but then sexually assaulted in some way. Was this based on any fact, or is it just Nielsen's heated imagination?
This story of the event on the beach, Nielsen later revises, and he admits that it's a fantasy, and he admits that the reality was that he saw a boy being rescued out of the water, and his body was there lying on the beach, and Nielsen looked him up and down and found the sight of him quite arousing.
This image would stay with Nielsen for the rest of his life.
He has this fixation with death and with sex, and the fantasy of a limp, passive, and ultimately dead body is something that recurs throughout his life.
It would eventually spur him on to strangle, drown, and mutilate 15 young men in order to live out this perverted teenage erotic dream. But this fantasy also marked the beginning of Nielsen's sexual interest in men.
Dennis Nielsen talks about a 16-year-old boy standing over him. And I think in many ways, that probably is his fantasy. It's a safe way for him to have sex with a male, because he can then say it wasn't his fault, he wasn't responsible.
Puberty was always something that Nielsen was going to have trouble dealing with in this remote Scottish community. He already knew that he was different from his peers and was struggling dealing with his homosexuality, and that was certainly something his mother would never accept.
The family was in no way modern. They were very conservative. Betty had been brought up with strict religious beliefs.
His mother was part of the Faith Mission, a Scottish Protestant evangelical church with no tolerance for homosexuality.
Nielsen undeniably had a sense of shame, religious shame about sex.
There was no way that Dennis could explore his homosexuality or talk about his homosexuality openly.
He felt that was a great blot on his character, and especially in very conservative Presbyterian Scotland. They're 200 years behind the time, and he grew up thinking that there must be something very odd about him.
Browbeaten by his mother's religion and unable to talk to her about his feelings for men, Nielsen delved deeper into his fantasy world.
From a very early age, it was clear that Dennis realised that he was lacking something that his mother couldn't fulfil. That is precisely why his life of fantasy had to develop to replace the void.
Was her cold indifference sending Nielsen into the fantasy world which would make him a killer?
So Dennis was repressed in many ways, but that sexual repression particularly affected him. And repressed sexual desires will always find a way of surfacing.
He was gradually developing into this terrible person that he eventually became.
The teenage Dennis Nielsen is struggling with a newfound fascination with sex and death. But how dangerous is this fantasy world for Nielsen?
Because he had such a poor relationship with his mother, it is often the case that people do retreat into their own isolation and also into their own fantasy world.
So he'll take himself off for long walks, he'll think up stories, he'll really kind of lose himself. So he has got this bank of fantasies that he's probably well drawing on, you know, during this isolated period of time. Nobody's going to put that right. He's kind of started off on this path, this very dangerous path here.
Back then, as a 13-year-old, this was a troubled kid, caught halfway between being straight or gay and not having a platform to discuss it with anybody.
If you look at the context of the time, homosexual acts between men were only legalised in 1967, so an incredibly stigmatised social group. And he's having feelings as he's approaching adolescence that he's having trouble making sense of because he's been instilled with this idea of sin and right and wrong from the devout religious extended family within which he's grown up. So he's feeling incredibly anxious and incredibly kind of uncomfortable about himself and his emerging identity at this time.
And of course, one would expect to have a mother to bring you through this, and he was all alone.
As the family got bigger, the kind of support that's available for him, you know, is much less. But I think even had he been the only child, I still don't think he would have been able to discuss feelings with his mother in such a kind of structured, rigid religious framework.
Coming up, serial killer Dennis Nielsen joins the army and heads out on the prowl.
Nielsen would have seen death on a regular basis and he would have become inured to it.
Nielsen lured 15 young men to his home, getting them drunk and incapable before strangling and drowning them. For weeks after he'd killed them, he kept their corpses for company before the stench of their decomposition forced him to dismember and dispose of them.
What and who is to blame for the creation of this remorseless murderer?
At the age of 15, Nielsen feels he no longer fits in this small Scottish community and decides to leave and join the army. He's seeking an escape, comradeship, and somewhere where he feels he can belong. And he finds this in the British Army Catering Corps, where he'd spend the next 12 years.
Nielsen says that he wanted to join the army because, in his own words, Fraserburgh was no place for a young gay man to grow up.
It's a venture. He's got out of a tiny little village where it's very restrictive into the big, bad, exciting world.
Nielsen got his wish and spent time between 1961 and 1967 in Norway, Germany and Cyprus. But he also learned to trade, which would help his later killing career.
Nielsen was a cook in the army and he also learned basic butchery skills. These were things that when it came to the practical mechanics of being a murderer, were very useful to him.
The army would give him the skills for murder and would also feed the dark thoughts he'd had throughout his childhood.
In 1967, he was sent on active service to Aden in the Middle East, where the army was being attacked by insurgents on a daily basis.
There were people being blown up, and he did see dead soldiers.
Nielsen would have seen death on a regular basis, and he would have become inured to it.
And the macho culture in the army meant Nielsen would start to drink to excess.
In his mind, he was one of the lads, but that's not how other people saw him. People saw him as being a bit peculiar, and the guy who couldn't hold his drink.
The other side of reason for drinking was escapism. And there's a history of him using alcohol to escape from reality.
This combination of men, death and booze would intensify Nielsen's repressed sexual desires.
He has a fantasy that always a young soldier who's dead. And that fantasy even scares him after a couple of months.
He was retreating further and further into a fantasy world, and he started putting himself in actually quite dangerous situations.
Nielsen would get drunk and hope other soldiers would manhandle him, or he'd find drunk men to grope.
Lots of alcohol had been drunk. These things could be made real.
But this fetish would turn into something more deadly in a few years' time.
Later, it goes on from being a passive body that happens to be there because it's passive, to one that's passive because he strangled the life out of it.
Nielsen is becoming increasingly strange. His creepy fantasies are at odds with army life, and he quits the military in 1973. With no home, he goes back to see his mother in Scotland. Is this a last-ditch attempt to fix their broken relationship?
It was something that Nielsen wanted from her. He wanted some kind of approval from her.
But Betty's character hasn't changed, and she still doesn't have the warm affection Dennis has spent the last 26 years craving.
Betty just couldn't give Dennis what Dennis wanted. She was just the wrong character. She was not an emotional person.
It would be the final time that Nielsen and his mother would speak face to face. And Betty used it to nag Nielsen about what he should be doing with his life.
She thought that he, when he came out of the army, he was going to come settle down, marry and have grandchildren, things like that. She had no perception or no understanding of his sexuality. So that in itself produces the later conflicts.
Nielsen's time in the army confirmed his struggles with his own sexuality, something that would haunt him for years to come. But if he had received more support from his mother and been able to be open about these feelings, might it have stopped him from becoming a serial killer? I think it's really interesting that he's an approval junkie. We all want to be liked, want to be loved, but because of the deficit his mother has left with him, that kind of need to be loved, that security, that comfort of knowing who you are, you get from your mother, he's never had that.
And he really cares what his mum thinks about him. The beliefs that this woman has run very much counter to who he's becoming. He's still seeking out her approval all of the time, and that's quite a toxic relationship there.
And of course, there's at no stage during that era would it ever have been possible for him to discuss his, you know, homosexual feelings with his mother.
I think he knew exactly what would happen if he did, and that would be that his mother would just disown him and write him off. So it was important that Dennis didn't disclose the fact that he was homosexual.
Those conversations he had with his mother, where she was challenging his future, why you're not settling down, they were among the last conversations he ever had with her.
And those conversations really compounded his sense of anxiety about who he was. So his mother was saying, why haven't you got married yet? You know, is there anybody on the scene? You know, when are you going to settle down and start a family? And by kind of asking those questions repeatedly, you know, she's further reinforcing, you know, that he's not quite the person that he should be.
After 5 weeks in Scotland and cruelly disappointed by his mother's inability to understand him, Nielsen decides to leave home again. He applies to be a policeman and is accepted by the London Metropolitan Police, moving to Hendon in December 1973.
in many ways, joined the police force for the same kind of reasons, the ready-made family, the culture, the macho culture and everything else.
For the first time in London, Nielsen would also have the opportunity to openly explore his sexuality.
There is a gay scene. It's London. It's not Fraserburgh. It's certainly not the army. It's allowed. It's permissible. This should be the happiest time.
It was during his first few months in police training, at the age of 27 years of age, when he would have his first full-on gay sexual experience. London, unlike Scotland or his time in the army, would provide him with the opportunity to have numerous casual same-sex encounters.
But these one-night stands seemed to leave him empty and feeling further alone. Dejected, he packs in the police force, getting a series of security and clerical jobs.
He finds himself lost in a big city. He can't connect. He's got to this stage. He's now in his late 20s, but he can't relate to people.
Age 28, lonely, hundreds of miles from home, Nielsen searches for his mother's support and writes regularly to her.
So we see in his letters often little practical details about things that he thinks that she will be, as a mother, be able to say, well done, Dennis, you've got yourself a flat, you've got yourself a job, you've got yourself this, and I approve.
But neither Nielsen or his mother still can bring themselves to mention his sexuality.
What he really wants is to be able to open up and confess the secrets of his soul and for her to wrap her arms around him and say, you know, there, Dennis, you're different from the rest, but we love you all the same.
Dennis will never get this approval or affection from his mother. Her cold demeanour from childhood never changes, and Dennis is left with an emotional void. He attempts to bond with others in London and has some small success in finding a meaningful relationship in November 1975.
He meets in a pub in Bayswater a young effeminate man called David Galashan. He's barely 18 and has a very, very weak personality. This was Nielsen wanting to fulfil an idea he has about a relationship. And it's doomed because he doesn't have the skills to form a proper relationship.
Nielsen doesn't know how to behave. He drinks heavily and bosses Galashan around. David Galashan puts up with Nielsen's boorish nature. For him, it was more a relationship of convenience than anything else.
David saw Dennis Nielsen as a meal ticket. He was homeless, pretty down on his luck. And Dennis Nielsen comes along and offers him a bed, food, lodging, everything else.
And Nielsen was desperate for the relationship to work.
He introduced people to Galichan, and he wanted other people to see that he was in a relationship, and somehow if enough people witnessed it, things might be more normal.
But in May 1977, the relationship falls apart. After putting up for months with Nielsen's unbearable behaviour, Galashan leaves one day and never comes back.
When Galashan decided to leave, it confirmed in Nielsen's mind that he was a failure.
Single and lonely, Nielsen would prowl the pickup joints of London looking for gay men to befriend, perfecting the technique he would use to select his later victims.
I first met Des in an amusement arcade in Leicester Square. He then asked me if I wanted to go for a coffee and something to eat. And I remember replying, well, I can't really afford to buy a meal. I've spent it all in here. And he said, well, that's no problem. I'll buy it.
Martin and other men would come back to Nielsen's flat, but his self-destructive drinking would make him difficult to be around.
He would become impossible to talk to, very argumentative and very demeaning. It could be quite nasty and unpleasant.
But if they tried to leave, Nielsen would beg them to stay.
He was desperate that I didn't go, and I thought, the guy is really lonely. The guy has no one.
Nielsen's drinking, loneliness, and desperation were starting to erode his sense of reality.
He was absolutely imprisoned in this cocoon of just himself and his fantasy.
And his imagination became darker and darker.
The things that he said were quite shocking, like, have you ever imagined bathing in a bath of blood? to which my reply was, no, not at all. What has somebody paid you? I just put this down to a man that's extremely drunk. So I just laughed it off. But he asked that question twice. And I remember saying to him, you're obsessed with bathing in blood. But how could you provide it? To which he made, which he always did when he made a sly comment, oh, if only you knew. Oh, if only you knew.
It's only a matter of time before Nielsen will kill. Nielsen always tried to be one of the lads in the army and the police, but it wasn't quite for him. He did begin to blossom in London, where he had his first proper gay relationships, albeit marred by his dysfunctional personality. What were the roots of these antisocial traits? And was it always inevitable that he'd become a serial killer? If Galishin's departure isn't the trigger, Liz, was it the fact that he couldn't get anyone to replace him? So that's why the killing started 12 months or so after he left.
I think his departure is a really important thing to look at, because in this partner, he's got a codependent. He's got somebody who is able to kind of pander to him. And Dennis Nielsen is very much a narcissist. And narcissists need that companion, that other person in their life to keep feeding their kind of obsession with themselves.
Do you think he was looking for a new relationship and then was simply left for one night stand?
I think possibly, yeah. But I think that he was a check on his behaviour, as well as being a kind of a codependent who was fueling his narcissism. He was perhaps keeping Nielsen on the straight and narrow for a while.
I mean, after Galishin leaves, there's a sense that he's still constantly searching for that elusive warmth he never got from his mother.
You got all of these factors that have been coming together over a number of years. So he's somebody whose mother wasn't, you know, as attentive as he felt that she should be. You've got him engaging in quite heavy drinking, which is going to be fueling some of his behaviour. There's quite a lot of toxic elements there.
And of course, as soon as Galishin goes, then his drinking gets worse, his inhibitions go, and suddenly we have a killer on the loose.
I think it does start him on that downward spiral into fatal violence.
Coming up, Dennis Nielsen's murder spree begins.
It wasn't the sex he wanted, he just wanted him to stay.
Between 1978 and 1982, Dennis Nielsen would kill at least 15 young men in his London flat, keeping their bodies as company to fuel his grotesque sexual fantasies. But at the end of 1978, over 12 months after his breakup with his first and only long-term boyfriend, Nielsen still hasn't killed. What would push him over the edge and make him a murderer? Almost 33 and completely alone, Nielsen was now at his lowest ebb.
He's self-medicating with the alcohol, and it's just burying the psychological problems deeper and deeper and deeper, to a point where, at some point, they're likely to explode.
Despite Nielsen driving other potential boyfriends away, one remained close. He would share his crippling feelings about his mother with him alone.
He seemed to think he'd done something wrong in the past to upset her, and she didn't really want to know him no more. He seemed so cut off from her, and he seemed quite upset by that.
One of the things that one might imagine Nielsen was looking for in his mother was some acceptance of his sexuality.
Nielsen's mother did know he was gay, but she just couldn't bring herself to believe it.
It wasn't in her nature, and Nielsen could never realise that or accept that. It may be one of the reasons why he eventually became so embittered.
When you can't really discuss your sexuality if you have a problem, but with your own mother, who can you talk to? She don't have many friends.
This inability to confide in his mother and his resultant self-loathing was now close to boiling point.
I think he was ashamed of his sexuality. I got the feeling that he found the whole situation disgusting. He just thought that certain things were wrong.
When he found himself at the age of 33, completely alone over Christmas and New Year, it must have felt like a failure to him, and it must have felt like a really big disappointment. He must have thought back to his family life and thought this was his lot in life.
And on December 30th, 1978, Nielsen would act to end his loneliness and isolation. He met 14-year-old Stephen Holmes in a local pub and lured him home to Melrose Avenue with the promise of more alcohol.
It wasn't the sex he wanted, he just wanted him to stay. He didn't want to be on his own on New Year's Eve.
Nielsen strangled the drunk Stephen Holmes with a tie and then drowned him in a bucket of water. But he hadn't finished. The killing was only a small part of his plan.
But he doesn't mutilate the body. He actually treats it with respect. He washes it. He dresses it. And he's treating that body as if it was a real person.
Nielsen kept the body for 8 months before burning it in his back garden in Melrose Avenue. This was the start of a 5-year killing spree. He would strangle and drown 15 young men who were all down on their luck. And he treated each one after death in the same way.
The thing that he wanted most was a dead body. That was the sexual thrill, and he would play with it for as long as he could keep it from putrefying.
He actually had bodies dressed up, he washed and cleaned them, sit them, and they'd be watching television together or listen to music together.
It was an object of real fascination and sexual thrill to him. So he didn't want to spoil that.
It was the relationship he wanted. He only got rid of the bodies when he could no longer put up with the smell. He wanted to keep them as long as he did.
When Nielsen moves to Cranley Gardens, he has a problem disposing of the bodies in the top floor flat and stores the body parts in cupboards and under the floor. It begins to stink. Despite this, he still has friends like Martin over in between the killings.
It was quite a sickly kind of smell, kind of, I don't want to breathe too much of this in.
Nielsen killed his final victim on the 28th of February 1983 in his flat. A few days later, his friend Martin tried to visit him while Nielsen was desperately dissecting the body.
And I knocked on the door and he didn't answer, but I could hear something inside the flat, something moving. Within about 5 seconds, he came to the door and he opened it, but didn't open the door fully. And I said, "Are you all right?" He said, "I'm sorry, Skip, I haven't been feeling well." He said to me, "Don't go in, don't go in." I said, "Who's in there? There's somebody in there, that's fine." He said, "Yes, that's it, there is, there's somebody in there." But he wasn't smiling.
Martin left Nielsen's home and never saw him a free man again.
If I had gone into that flat, I don't think I would have come out.
Nielsen was busy flushing parts of his final victim down the toilet. 2 days later, the police would discover the blocked drains and Nielsen would be arrested and confess to his degenerate crimes in Hornsey Police Station.
Nielsen once said to me, "Do you know what? It's probably as well I have been caught," he said, "because if it hadn't been now and 15 victims, he said it might have been 150. I couldn't stop. It just went on and on and on."
Nielsen was merciless and predatory in his pursuit of young victims. But who ultimately is to blame for his crimes? Did his mother give birth to a psychopathic murderer, or did she mould his personality into that of a serial killer? To what extent was Betty responsible for these terrible crimes?
I think she was quite a passive mother. So I think she just hoped that everything would turn out okay, and she perhaps didn't go in and intervene when mothers sort of, you know, 50 years time would have intervened because of the society in which they were living.
If his relationship with his mother was more accommodating and warmer, and if they had had an opportunity to discuss matters of a sexual nature and his homosexual feelings, would this outcome have been much different?
I think that the role that, his mother played, we can locate that in terms of her denial of his homosexuality. And I think that that frame of mind that she adopted around that was very much a symptom of the society in which she was living. So it wasn't acceptable, you know, for her to be supporting her son in his sexuality. So I think she was really caught between a rock and a hard place.
As a serial killer, he's really a product of his times.
He is very much so. And if you look at some of those 1950s values of his mother and the community around him in terms of what real men are, yeah, he was never going to live up to that. So I think it was very much his stigmatisation which sowed the seeds for the serial killer he became.
Dennis Nielsen, now in his 70s, has spent more than 33 years behind bars and will never be released. While much blame can rest with his mother Betty for the man he became, it is Nielsen alone who took the decision to rob so many young men of their lives. Their family's only consolation is the knowledge that Nielsen will never again be a free man.
He in fact said at one stage, "It amazes me that I have no tears for myself, no tears for my victims, nor for those bereaved by my actions."